Welcome to this episode of the Circle of the Panda podcast. This episode is a bit of a unique type episode. I hope we do more like this. It is one where we're going to have three of us on there. It is a recording with Fred Robinson from Body Helix and Steve Price. And it is another pickleball related podcast. Again, the podcast isn't just about pickleball, but there's a fair amount of just some cool things happening in it. So I ask it, you try it. But this episode is Fred Robinson and Steve Price and myself, and we will go through Steve's background in pickleball, what he sees in the sport, what Fred sees in the sport, just a ton of fun in this one. So listen in and enjoy. All right, so this podcast episode is an exciting one for me. Circle the Panda has always been about finding like-minded people and, when possible, collaborating. We know those seasons can last a week or they could last years, or you don't want to hang on too tight to that. But that's the whole thing, is to find the people that are like-minded and or of similar mind, however you want to state it, and then say, you know what, let's have a conversation with the intent, again, of, you know what, listeners, viewers, whatever your platform is, just use it. Use it in a way to make a positive influence on those around you. And the reason I start this way, I've never started an episode this way, because this is super exciting for me, because this is the first time we've had three of us on here. And we, Fred, I was going to say co-host. We're going to see how this goes.
Who's the co-host?
Well, I was going to say, you might co-host, Steve might co-host, I might co-host. But let me tell you how we got into this. And in the first place, so Fred Robinson is the owner of Body Helix. I have known Fred for years now. And I will say this, every time Fred, I'm going to embarrass you, but I say this last time, every time Fred says, use this product or use this paddle or you ought to meet this person, I have learned over the years is to pay attention. Always pay attention, because Fred, you just have that outlook that I go, what Fred says, for the most part, I'll listen to.
When Fred speaks, right?
When Fred speaks. So Steve Price is on here with us. Steve, thanks for being on here. Normally when I have guests, I spend hours researching them backwards and forwards. Uh-oh. But I knew Fred was going to be on here. But I do want to tell you what he said about you. He goes, I know somebody that you might want to know, one, as a practice singles partner, and two, as a doubles partner. Okay, I don't want to hang on to that now. Because pickleball...
It's too late. He's played you.
What's that? Yeah. But Steve, so that you know, see, he's still smiling. He's kind. Fred, it tells me he didn't go, oh. In pickleball, it tends to be that if you find a higher player, like... I think Steve is a higher level player than I am. If you find a higher level player, then you try to attach to him, like that high school kid that finds the popular kid, and you just grab and hang on. Steve, I'm not doing that.
Not at all. And you are way too kind.
Yeah. I know how that works too in pickleball. For those who don't know, you play at a higher level. You're the weaker player in doubles. And guess what happens? You end up getting tattooed. Over and over again.
You get all the balls.
Yeah, you get all the balls. So at the end of this, Steve, I'm not going to go, so Steve, how about it? Next weekend at a tournament, me and you. No, sir.
Yeah, do it on a podcast and put him under pressure.
Oh, there you go. I like it.
So no pressure, Steve. I'm not going to do that to you. But so Fred, I don't know if you want to start with the introduction, Steve, or how you want to do this. But Steve, So in summary on this point, when Fred said multiple times, I know someone you have to meet, and he keeps mentioning your name, you're not just a great player. There's also something unique about you, because Fred's never paired with anybody that didn't have a certain way about him. Let me put it that way. So Fred, do we want to do it like last time where I say, Fred, you have the floor, you run with it, or do we want to ask Steve to do an introduction, man. I'm going to let you take it, co-host.
All right. I do have a couple of questions. One comment about the things that you were saying about me. They're very kind, but you need to understand that most of those things I tell you, I just make that stuff up, JD. I don't think I've ever told you that.
So, oh, no.
Just it's for
trust
the record.
But verify. Believe, trust but verify.
Okay. Okay. So, Steve, thanks for joining in. I'm really excited about having the three of us on here. I knew it was going to be a lot of fun. And I'm really curious because we have three players here that are people that are steeped in tennis backgrounds. And I'm really curious to find out, what was it that pulled you with your long tennis history from tennis into pickleball? And you might comment on a couple of the, your, you know, part of your journey on tennis, how you were so steeped in tennis, and then what made that shift? I know what happened to me, but I'd really like to hear your story.
Sure. Absolutely. Yeah. Well, first of all, let me just say thanks for having me on the podcast, JD and Fred. It's great to see a couple of great guys here and to be able to spend some time chatting together with you today. You know, I say that I kind of fell into pickleball by accident almost. And it was a set of circumstances that just led me to fall in love with the game. You know, been a tennis player all my life, grew up playing, starting with my dad as my coach. He turns 87 this month, and he's still playing tennis. And so tennis has just been a part of my life. Right. And so college, beyond college, then hit those years when you start playing senior events. And you know, Fred, you were always one of those guys we looked up to because you were just killing it out there against all kinds of competition across the country and the world. So playing tennis up to, you know, fast forward to just about 2.5 years ago, and living here in Gainesville, Florida, playing some 5-0 league stuff, going down to Orlando for sectionals, practicing with some juniors that the junior development coach here just kept putting in front of me, which was always a blast for me. And then I run out of juniors to play with. They all leave and go to college. And so it's July the 4th weekend, 2022, and a buddy who's been trying to get me out on the pickleball court for a long time by this point says, "Hey, friend just built a court in their backyard. Come play with us this weekend." And I said, "Okay, sure, fine." Instant love affair. First time I put a paddle in my hand and played, just loved it. And so kind of went from there.
In your pickleball journey, are you playing all pickleball now? Or are you playing some tennis, some pickleball, or...
Pretty much all pickleball. You know, I spent about a year straddling the fence, still trying to spend time on the tennis court and playing pickleball. And then really, actually, it was the tournament where you and I met, JD, that tournament in Atlanta, September of 23. Went to that one. That was my first APP event. Had some decent results there. And so coming out of that, I thought, you know what, I'm just going to make the jump, and just have loved it ever since.
Hey, Fritz, I'll tell you the rest of that story. I just remembered part of it. I tried to forget it. I was in that
tournament.
He
tried to block it from his memory.
I tried to block it. I was in that tournament and I looked at the seedings and I went, I'm third seed. How in the world did that happen? You know, I was feeling, how did that happen? And then shortly after that, I ran into Steve, and and there was a reset in humility.
You were asking the same question. How in the world did that happen with the seeds?
Yeah,
well,
Steve's
I was brand new and didn't know anybody, you know. Yeah. So I was just getting to know the lay of the land, and So anyway,
yeah. Interestingly, when I made a transition, Steve, from the tennis to the pickleball, it took me all of about maybe a month and I was gone.
Wow.
I've played only pickleball since. Wow. I've been having a blast. It's absolutely just, a lot of the matches are just hysterical. They're just so freaking funny on the court, and the competition is great. I'm playing with a lot of former high level tennis players. So maybe that helped transition when I came in. I had kind of a free card for a while with many of the good tennis players. They let me play, even though I didn't know how to play. And we just played tag for the first, what we called tag for the, you're laughing, for the first 3 months. All we tried to do was hit each other with the ball. We're tennis players. And then we realized, well, we might have to learn how to play the kitchen and do some more.
Yeah.
It was a quick
shift. I'm laughing because we have a group here that plays that loves to tag each other. And so every now and then we even play a game where if you tag somebody, you get 2 points instead of one.
Yeah, that's a great. So that leads me into another question is how do you think the tennis players are changing the game? And when I mean changing the game, I've only been in for the same length of time you have, a short time. But when I look back at previous tennis, it looked more like chess. It was a sport, but it looked more like chess. And what I'm seeing in the last 2 years of the pickleball is it seems to be becoming more like dodgeball. And so when you see tennis players coming in, do you think that's one of the reasons that this sport is going more to the dodgeball type
Yeah,
game?
that's a really interesting question. And I certainly think that the high level tennis background that some players are bringing is a part of that. I think it's probably a cluster. I think it's that. I think it's more young people starting early and getting into the game. And you look at the pro level and the young players are really speeding up the game, right? And they're creating new shots and new ways of attacking. And the paddles, oh my goodness, the evolution of the paddles is ridiculous. And so I think all of those things, but tennis players certainly, because there's like a base level skill that you come with to the game, and in terms of the stroke production, players who are accustomed to racket speed, and now you're talking about a paddle that is, fraction of the weight of a racket. So I think all of those things are making a difference.
And the tennis players certainly are accomplished volleyers. And
Absolutely.
the first thing that I found on the pickleball court is, for good or not, is when I was on the pickleball court, I could lob pickleball players. When you lob, it's like a double dog dare when you're playing a tennis. They just dare you to tennis player to lob me because it's batting practice. And tennis players have very good overheads and can absolutely just decimate the ball. So,
Absolutely.
yeah.
Yeah.
So I just wonder, is that good for the sport? Is it bad for the sport? Yeah,
You
it's
know,
changing.
yeah, it maybe it's a little bit of a mixed bag, because I do still love a good kitchen rally, where you really have to grind it out, you have to finesse, you have to be creative. And so I do find myself playing in some settings where it so quickly goes to the bang, 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 and you're done. And so I do. So yeah, I think it adds energy, and it adds another element to the game. So I'm glad that they're at least putting some parameters now on paddles. And trying to apply some standards that hopefully help us keep some of that as a part of the game.
What do you see in the senior tennis style wise? We watch the professional tour, but in the senior tennis, are you seeing one of the big observations that I see in the pro pickleball is that the kitchen points are longer. They're in there and they're hitting several balls. At the club play, it's one or two and something's going to happen. The net's going to get hit. Somebody's going to get pegged. But in the senior pros, are you seeing that same working the kitchen more or not?
I do see that.
Do you?
And especially, one of the things that I'm seeing just in the last year is how many more people are coming over from tennis, with significant tennis backgrounds. And so they're bringing that experience, they're bringing that skill level. And so there's some fantastic points and exchanges that are happening, where you get some finesse, you get some dinking, and then you get a speed up and you get a reset, and then you're back into the dink again. So it's been a great skill builder, to have to kind of continue to develop my own game in order to keep up with what's happening as other players come into the game with fantastic skills.
Hey,
Do
Steve,
you
there's a
go ahead?
bit of, I can't tell how many times I've had people say this pickleball has changed their life. I mean, at all different levels, beginners, pro. How has it changed your life? And second question is, what is the magic behind it that's doing that for people, so many people?
JD, the first word that comes to mind for me, in terms of how it's impacting my life, the word that I immediately think of is joy. I'm just joyful when I'm on the pickleball court, I just love being out there. It's just fun, you know? And, to Fred's point a minute ago, just sometimes it's just hilarious, you know, that we get to do this and have so much fun. I think that people have approached pickleball with a mindset of enjoyment first. Now, obviously, we see some places and some situations where folks take the competition a little too seriously. But for the most part, people just want to have a good time. And if you can get out there and have a good time and have a good battle with other folks, then it's been a great day. And I love the intergenerational component. You know, a lot of people I play with are half my age. And that's a blast, you know, to be able to get on the court, a few times a week with people who are much younger than I am and come from lots of different backgrounds.
Thank you.
Steve, do you enjoy when they're half your age and they walk up to the net and tap paddles that they don't make eye contact with you and they just walk away? Yeah,
Oh, I like to look them in the eye for it.
but you don't get the return. They're looking at their feet. There's no eye contact. No eye contact. It's okay.
I must say, I do like that when you run across somebody's in their 30s and they see the gray hair and the age and go, ah, yeah. You want to play some singles? And they've never really done it before, and you're going, okay, yeah. But you know, it gives people our age and people older hope. You know, hey, if this guy that looks like he slept in his clothes can do it, then I can. It just gives people hope that they can improve.
I will say that one thing that I have learned on the pickleball court is never underestimate anybody. You
How
know?
there's what their strokes look like.
No.
They may be badminton players or ping pong players, and
Or just good athletes. You know, one of my favorite people to be mixed up with around here is someone who she was a collegiate soccer player. And she's just a great athlete and she's a fierce competitor. And she never played tennis growing up, so her strokes are very unorthodox. But oh my goodness, you know, watch out.
Hey, do you think something that I have thought about for a while with the goes back to the question of dodgeball, chess, where that pendulum is swinging, where the game is going to end up. But one of the ways that I think we could really, or an area we could give more thought to is the ball. What do you think about modifying? You know, in tennis, it took a century before we actually changed from a tennis ball to a green dot, balls for kids. And so, what do you think about in pickleball if we had something that was maybe a hybrid of plastic, rubber, a ball that is toned down a little bit, which would the faster the ball, the more it's going to be like dodgeball. The slower the ball, it's going to be, you know, more like a chess game. So, do you have any thoughts about, do you think we could do
Well,
that?
you know, this is one of the reasons I love you, Fred, is because you're always thinking about evolution and what can be next. And, you know, I mean, it's one of the reasons I was so excited to be a part of Body Helix was
Oh,
because I knew
thank
you
you.
would be into the R&D and like continuing to help the game evolve. And so the question of the ball is a really interesting one. And even like tying that to, like you said, the evolution of the ball in tennis and in other sports. We've seen that over time. Yeah,
Golf.
soccer, golf, right? So there's a history there. There's a precedent in other sports for doing this. And so, you know, maybe that is, you know, if the game gets to the point where it's too much about the speed, for one thing, I think if it becomes total speed, then the interest, particularly from a spectator standpoint, is going to wane. Because I don't, I think part of what people love is that it's a quick sport, but you can have a very long point in a short amount of time, and those long points are pretty cool to watch, and even cooler to be a part of. And so yeah, I think if we lose that, we're gonna definitely lose something in the sport.
Fred, do you mind if I
Go
ask something real quick and then I'll be quiet there, man, or I'll go back. I said I
ahead.
wasn't going to talk as much, but I did do a little research to you also have another profession that you're involved in other than just pickleball. Can you tell us what that is?
Sure. I currently serve as lead pastor at Trinity United Methodist Church in Gainesville, Florida. Been serving in ministry in some form or capacity just about since I got out of college and finished playing a little bit of pro tennis afterwards. So that's my main gig. So pickleball has been a wonderful, just kind of a fun avenue for me to get recreation, and also it's just really great for my mental and emotional health too.
Oh yeah. Yeah, well no, and Fred, that's almost a topic of an entirely other podcast with you, Steve. But here's what showed immediately when this year I remember so much when I met you is the fruit of the spirit, as people say. You mentioned joy. There's something about the sport that brings out joy. And in a world that's going, well, but people will say this, but that they act differently. You're performing your great role, and then when you're out with the rest of us, you're just demonstrating that wonderfully, and that joy just came forward. And we had a guest last time that was that kind of tied her spiritual journey through it, and it like 100 podcast downloads within 24 hours. It just took off.
Wow. Wow.
But
Well, thank you for
yeah, I,
that.
what's that?
I said thank you for that. One of my hopes is always that, what people see or hear from me in the pulpit or in a small group setting is the same that they see or hear from me out in the world. And fruit of the spirit is a big deal for me too. Interestingly, just a little side note, one of the things that has happened in the last just over a year is been able to pull together my passions in a way. We had a group of folks at the church who got into pickleball, and we ended up converting a couple of sports courts that we had on our property into, we now have six permanent pickleball courts.
Oh, nice.
Our whole property is open to the community for walking, for enjoyment, all of that. We have people out there all the time, and it's so much fun to walk out there and just interact with people who, so appreciate having another venue to just enjoy the sport and have fun.
Feel the joy. Yeah,
Yep.
thank you.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, it's that connection. It's a real connection instead of digital. It's a chance for
Yeah.
people. I've met tennis players that I didn't know before. I've met all kinds of new people. I've made new friends, just people that are delightful. They're a pleasure to be on the court with. And yeah, so big, big part of it.
Well, I'm thinking about that weekend that I was up in Charlotte not quite a year ago. And, really, I mean, it was the first time you and I had spent any meaningful time together, and just the immediate sense of connection. And then, you introducing me to some other people and us playing some doubles that day, and you brand new people. All of a sudden, you feel that enjoyment and pleasure of connecting.
So, based on your background, I want to get down to some nitty-gritty questions here. What exactly do you look for when you're if you were going to pick a doubles partner? What are you looking for? Now, see, and see, I like to joke around a lot, but also seriously, what do you look for in a partner? What makes it click for you?
Boy, oh boy, that's a good question. First, I would say the first thing is somebody that I think I'm going to enjoy being with, right?
JD's making notes here. He's writing.
I mean, yes, I want to have a partner that I feel like we have the ability to compete and potentially win an event. But I also want to make sure that it's somebody that I feel like I can just enjoy having a good time with, So that's an important part of the connection for me. From a tactical or strategic standpoint, I want somebody who has good hands, who can be patient, because especially, senior pro pickleball, you got to have a full bag of skills if you're gonna do well. I mean, none of us have them all, but you got to have a pretty full bag of skills in order to compete. Otherwise, you're just gonna get isolated, and that ends up being frustrating for the other person because you never see a ball. And so somebody that's going to complement me well, I'm most likely going to go to a right-hander because I think the right lefty, with me being a lefty, the right left combo is a good tag team. And then depending on who it is I'm playing with, we may play differently. Like, for example, this last tournament that I played, it's the first time David Spearman and I had played doubles together. David loves to attack, right? And he's accustomed to, especially because he mostly plays with other righties, he's accustomed to taking all those balls in the middle and even over the middle. So first game out of the shoot, we're playing this team, and I love to attack. And we must have banged paddles half a dozen times in the first game. And so we had to kind of figure out, okay, how are we going to do this together? And, you know, so we ended up adapting. And I'm like, you know, David, you are so accustomed to doing that. You just take those. I'm going to pivot a little bit and we'll go from there. So anyway, long story short, enjoyment of the game. Somebody that's got a good bag of skills, somebody that can be patient, somebody that's got good hands. And I love somebody that can finish a point.
Yeah. Yeah. And I hear what you're saying. For me, one of the big things has been when I move in and I whiff the ball, or I hit myself in the foot with the ball, or it bounces off the ceiling. Obviously, I'm not aiming there. But when you make eye contact, you don't want to get that look.
Yeah.
That look of death where, are you kidding me?
Right.
Man, I can't believe you missed that ball. And that's kind of a deal breaker for me, because the whole game will just go down the toilet. It's no longer fun. And you want somebody that you can certainly compete with at a level that you are with your skill level, but you want somebody that you can lose with and smile and, you know, and look forward to playing with and getting back on the court with again. I think,
yeah,
tennis, whatever it is, whatever sport, that team thing is really, really important.
Yeah, I'm not sure enough people pay attention to the chemistry component.
Yes, exactly.
They're looking for the person who they think has the best set of skills and therefore can give them the best chance of winning. But chemistry is a big deal.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I played a bunch of different sports I've tried, but I've never seen one like pickleball for the mental. You had to be mentally tough, but you all have, in terms of the chemistry too, you can, there's a bit of a karma. If I've ever, and I stopped it early on, if I've ever said, oh, my partner's having a rough day, I wish they'd play, then I'll turn around and hit the fence with a serve or just make, and I go, all right, you know, there's something about the chemistry. You have to keep it just right.
Yeah.
Or it swings either direction too much. Quickly.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I think, you know, some of that is, you know, both partners being self-aware enough and also aware enough of what motivates and encourages their partner and makes them play to the best of their ability. And so recognizing that, you know, what can I do? You know, one of the most important things that I think we do in doubles is not only pay attention to what do I need to do to perform best, but how can I help my partner perform best?
Oh, yeah.
For this team. So,
much more of a thinker's game than I ever thought it was.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. The comment about self-aware, you know, we could write a book on that, but how important, doesn't matter the sport or in life, wherever you are, that is a biggie. I have another question about the creating a level playing field. When you're playing tournaments, you see the issue that we have with paddles, and it's been a rocky road. The associations, the USAP, the EPA are trying to figure this out, that we have new testing coming in. How do you think we could create a more level playing field? For me, the value of competition, if I go on the court with you or I go on the court with JD, if the equipment is going to determine the match, then any medal for me, any medal that I win doesn't mean anything at all. Yeah. I want to embrace the fact that we're going to have a level playing field, and then it has value to me. And I want you to be at your best when I play. I know this is weird. I want you to be at your best when I play, because if you are at your best and we have a level playing field, then that whole competition thing for me is of great interest and great value. Without that, and I'm seeing too much of the playing field is not level. So do you see any? be it through regulation or through equipment, where we could create that, do a better job at that.
Yeah. You know, I think some of that, Fred, is because we're in this season of rapid growth and rapid evolution and development, you know, and it makes me think back to when oversized tennis rackets first came into being.
Yeah.
And then different string patterns, you know, and so all of a sudden there were all these things that were happening. And at some point, there had to be some decisions made about, okay, we got to, everybody doesn't have to use exactly the same racket or paddle now, but we do need to have some standards, and we need to kind of create boundaries so that it does help the playing field be level. It doesn't mean that everybody has to play with equally weighted paddles or paddles that have the exact same, you know, swing weight, whatever. But because you want to create some flexibility for players to find something that works best for their game within a set of standards. So I think that's one of the challenges now, is who gets to set those standards and who's a part of that conversation.
And of course, and you can tell me with this senior pro what you guys have experienced, but when we're watching the pros, they have testing, they have paddle testing, but that's just for the very few, whatever, 100 players of the millions of people that are out there playing. And so when we go to tournaments, when I go to tournaments, even, and I played with tennis buddies that we have won nationals and worlds together in tennis, we have a background of playing at high levels. When quite honestly, when we went to a couple of the national tournaments and we played with them, we walked around and we just thought, this is, I don't know how to put this, this is a joke, because you have people who are playing with paddles that are completely core crushed, and you have people, and but nobody's regulating. There's no way to really test that. They may or may not know that, but the playing field was simply not level at all, and it takes away the value of having that medal. And so when you're playing, you guys don't have testing. Do you have testing?
We do.
Okay.
So it's interesting, as you're saying this, I'm realizing, you know, that I'm not at a tournament level. I'm not experiencing some of what you and others have, because we do have to have our paddles tested. In fact, the Fort back in January, I put two paddles in, didn't realize that one of them actually or had crushed, and it didn't pass. Well, great. I'm glad it didn't, because I shouldn't be playing with a paddle that wouldn't pass testing. But I think that also goes back to the point of, you've got some people that may be intentionally playing outside the rules, if you will, but then you've got other folks who may not even realize that they are. But how do you, how to implement a fair set of standards across the board at all levels? That's a challenge.
No, it's a total rodeo. And in all fairness, within the technology of where we are right now, and the majority of the paddles are the polypropylene honeycomb, that is a plastic core, just like your shoes. It will, I don't care whose paddle you're using, they're going to wear out. And with some of them, when they wear out, they become very, very hot. With some of them, they wear out and they still become more powerful. But you have that, I'm gaining power, but I'm losing control. And that can become dangerous on the court. But at least for now, where we are with the paddles, that's a common denominator across all the different companies that are trying to make, you know, we try to make quality paddles. There are many companies out there that are doing a great job making some great paddles, but they are going to wear out. But there's no place to monitor. There's no simple test where we can tell people, when I'm playing it, even at the nationals, it was a rodeo. You were on the court. Everyone knows, the referee knows, but no one's doing anything about it. And that can be painful when you're competing.
I play with what Fred puts in my hands, and they're always going to be right. I can always trust they're going to be good and fair and safe in the standard.
But you know, that's going to happen in the industry, and it's going to happen with all the companies. It's going to happen with our company. If you overplay, if you play something that's completely worn out, it changes. But there's no way to monitor that at the amateur level. And I it that in itself is disappointing to me that there's not. We didn't have that in tennis. You know, we used a ball. You could change the tension on your strings, but no one there had an advantage that anyone else, you know.
Yeah. And you can
Yeah.
see the strings, right? So you could see
Yeah.
if
Yeah.
there
Yeah.
was a string pattern that wasn't
Yeah. Yeah.
legal. Yeah, big
But
difference.
to grow the sport and to look into the future of pickleball, how did we get to where we are with this growth? And how do we continue on this path? I think we have to be very careful. We have to be cognizant of the fact that if we don't take certain steps, it can really take the luster out of it. It can take the fun out of it. I see in open play, some of the games are not fun, and people will walk away, or they just won't play with a certain few people because they just want to have fun. They don't want to get pegged with the ball four times in a game. And it's also the safety issue. Yeah. So.
Well, hey Fred, we're getting close, man. I don't want to get all the trade secrets away because I want to hold you. I want to hang you guys to hang on afterwards. But so we're aware of y'all's time. We're getting close to the time I told you guys we're going to record.
Sure.
So Fred, close us out, man. Land the plane for us. Let's ask these few questions of Steve here.
Well, I don't know that I have a plan to close this out, but I really appreciate the opportunity to get your feedback and to get Steve's feedback on what you're seeing. That helps me. I want to see what you're seeing at your tournaments. Does that vary from the amateur play? Does that vary from the club play that we play in? And those insights for me and being able to do this, have this talk is just exciting. It's fun for me, and I always want to learn. I'm just probably one of the most curious people you've ever seen.
A real pleasure to have known you, Fred, and I'm listening to the details that you're asking are things that I don't pay attention to in the game, but I should. And so, anybody has the opportunity to either buy your products or engage with you is it needs to. And then Steve, thank you for the advice that you gave me on how to be a
Yeah.
better partner for whoever I'm a partner for, and also for the way you demonstrate the game. Again, I met you in that first, I think it was your first tournament.
Yep.
And I was new to the game. How do I act? How do I, do I take it seriously or fun? And I remember at the end, you said, that was fun. I appreciate the way you handled yourself. I said, well, that's the main thing I ought to be thinking about
Yeah. Yeah.
is, are we having fun? And both you guys have helped create a lot of joy in the game for me. And so I appreciate that and reminded me of what it's all about.
Fred, you said you talked about your curiosity, and man, I'm so grateful for the way that curiosity has led to helping the development of the game and equipment for the game. And it's a pleasure. It's a pleasure to put a Body Helix paddle in my hand every time I go out on the court.
Well, thank you. It's a privilege for us and for me. I get a big kick out of. I just want to do something fun for the sport and nice for the
Right.
sport. Yeah. So.
Well, thank you guys for being on here with me. I appreciate it very much.
Thank you.
Hang on so I can get some notes, make some more notes if you'll hang on
Okay.
for me. Thank you.